It's Your Turn with Dave Mullarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's Your Turn. Weekdays from 1230 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's Your Turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's Your Turn with Dave Mullarkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn. Open talk to begin the program today. We've got guests who will be chatting with us later. We're going to be talking about Medicare open enrollment. There's a lot of commercials these days on radio and TV and direct mailing. If you're a senior citizen of Medicare eligibility age, you've probably been getting a ton of mailings over the past few weeks. So just what is open enrollment? What does that mean? We'll be talking about it with Raymond Hurd, who is an official spokesperson for Medicare, for the government agency. So he'll be on with us to chat a little bit about just what all that means and the details of open enrollment. And also today we're going to be talking with Canadian journalist Howard Green, who is not here in Butler. He's in Toronto, actually. We'll be chatting with him on the telephone today about an interesting individual that I had never heard of until I ran across a note, an email from Howard Green. It is Railroad CEO Hunter Harrison, and he was the head, the top dog, the chief executive officer of four different railroads during his career. He just died last year, Hunter Harrison. And I don't know, I've always been fascinated by railroads. I know a lot of people who have been fascinated by railroads and wish that we still had a lot of them here in the United States. We have some freight rail lines, but very, very few passenger lines. Well, anyway, we'll talk about that with Howard Green later on the program today, and talk about Hunter Harrison. The railroads he ran were the Illinois Central, CN, that's the Canadian National Railway. Some of you may be familiar with the CN Tower in Toronto, Canadian National. Also Canadian Pacific, he ran that, and he ran CSX for a while. He was an American, but he ran two Canadian railroads. So that's coming up later on the program today. It should be interesting. We begin, however, with open talk at 283-2525, 283-2525. I don't know about you folks, but I've had a very difficult time getting past the horrific shootings at Tree of Life Synagogue in Squirrel Hill this past Saturday. And we've had other tragedies, of course, that have struck our area, some of them close to home, but I don't recall one that has hit me quite as hard as this. And I thought maybe we could share some thoughts on it today if you're also having trouble getting past this horrific incident. I mean, what have we come to here in the United States, here in western Pennsylvania, in Pittsburgh, where a man armed with an assault rifle, a weapon of war, and three handguns goes into a house of worship and starts murdering people only because of their religion, only because they are Jews, they are Jewish. I mean, what kind of a person would do that? What kind of a person could be filled with such hate to start indiscriminately murdering people simply because of their religion? And in the couple of days since the great tragedy, we have heard more and more about the victims, 11 people shot, several others, six others, I believe, injured, including several police officers, one of whom as you just heard on the news, was a graduate of Slippery Rock University some 5 years ago, now a police officer in the city of Pittsburgh. But as we learn more about the individuals, most of them were older people. One of them in her 90s, but most of them older people who were gathered for Shabbat at the Tree of Life Synagogue in the Squirrel Hill section of Pittsburgh. Shabbat is, I am not Jewish, but Shabbat is the celebration of the Sabbath. And in the Jewish faith, the Sabbath is Saturday. So they were gathered Saturday morning. I understand there were actually several services going on in the synagogue, including one celebrating the birth of a newborn baby boy. And this going on, and a guy comes in with an assault rifle and handguns and starts murdering people. Even though we're now 3 days later, it's still hard to believe, isn't it? It's hard to imagine. Wow. 283-2525 is the number if you'd like to talk about it. Maybe to make us feel a little better if we discussed it a little bit. There is an interfaith vigil and service planned for this Thursday at Congregation B'nai Abraham here in Butler. That's near the bottom of North Main Street Hill in the city. It's open to all, 7 o'clock Thursday evening. A vigil and a service here in Butler in remembrance of these individuals who... They went to temple on Saturday morning and were gunned down and were murdered. I recently finished reading a book called Hunting Eichmann by Neil Bascom. And it's not a new book. The book came out, 8-10 years ago, something like that. But I had just discovered it. Picked it up in a bookstore several months ago. And it's a pretty thick book. It goes into a great deal of detail about Adolf Eichmann, who was the mastermind of what the Nazis called the Final Solution, the eradication of Jews from Europe by killing them, by murdering them. I was familiar with the discovery and the capture of Adolf Eichmann. I had read an earlier book called The House on Garibaldi Street. In fact, I've read that book a couple of times because it's just such a fascinating account of how the Mossad, the Israeli Secret Service, eventually tracked down Adolf Eichmann. He escaped from Germany after World War II and ended up in Argentina living under a different name. But they got some tips here and there, and they eventually determined that it was him. They had no recent pictures of Adolf Eichmann. And, of course, the Mossad is operating out of Israel, and he was in Argentina. So I was familiar with the story of how they, first of all, had to determine that he was him. He was living and working under the name of Ricardo Clement. Was working in an auto plant, as I recall, outside of Buenos Aires in Argentina. And they sent some Secret Service agents there to spy on him, take pictures, and they tried to determine if it was really him, Adolf Eichmann, and they finally did. And then they had to decide how they were going to get him out because Argentina was harboring a great many former Nazi leaders at the time, and they knew that the Argentine government at the time would not extradite Eichmann, so the Mossad, the Israeli Secret Service, planned a kidnapping plot. And they sent agents in, and they kidnapped him, and they snuck him out of Argentina and put him on trial. They could have shot him right there, but they brought him back to Israel and put him on trial, and they did that on purpose so that hopefully the world would learn more about the horrors of the Holocaust. Well, in the most recent book that I read, and I just finished it, well, within the past month, Hunting Eichmann, it tells that story too, but it goes into a lot of detail about Eichmann's operations in Hungary, which was one of the last countries where, and I just hate the phrase, the final solution was implemented under the direct supervision of Adolf Eichmann. He actually went to Hungary once the Nazi armies had overrun that country and deposed the government there. He actually went to Hungary to personally oversee the arrest and the rounding up of the Jews and the sending of them to the death camps. It makes me shiver just to think about it, that millions of people, 8 million people, were murdered, were gassed to death, and then their bodies burned in these giant ovens just because they were Jews, just because of their religion. Only reason that they were killed. And that happened in the 1940s, well, the late 30s and into the 1940s. And still happening today, just this past Saturday in Pittsburgh. Just makes you want to shake your head, doesn't it? So sad, so horrible. And this gunman, I won't say alleged gunman because everybody knows it was him. I mean, there's no question about it. There's no alleged about it. But there will be a trial, of course. It's the way we do it in this country. He was wounded by police and has sufficiently recovered that he was wheeled into a preliminary hearing yesterday in preparation for his trial. Wow. What a horrible, horrible situation. I don't know how long it'll take us to even try to begin to move past this. I've had a very difficult time. I know this past weekend, I didn't even feel like catching football games. You know, after the news of this broke on Saturday at Tree of Life Synagogue, I listened to part of the Steeler game on Sunday, but I just one of those things where, you know, I really didn't care. I just couldn't get my mind past this horror at Tree of Life Synagogue in Squirrel Hill. Well, it's open talk. 283-2525 is our number. 283-2525. By the way, Tony Norman, there have been a number of opinion pieces since this horrific tragedy. And David Shribman had a great piece in the Sunday edition of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And Tony Norman's editorial in today's Post-Gazette. Of course, there's no published paper edition of the Post-Gazette on Tuesdays. But his column is available online. And he talks about evil and violence and demonic individuals. A sad editorial comment, but a very poignant one. Tony Norman is a terrific writer. I don't always agree with him. I would hope not. Any opinion writer, editorial writer, I would hope that I never totally agree with him, but he's quite the man. He was a guest, by the way, several years ago now. He was a guest here on the program. He had come to Butler to speak for a Martin Luther King Day event. And while he was here, I asked him, would he mind sticking around and coming on the program with me? And he did. He was very gracious. We had a nice conversation with him. Maybe I'll try to get him back on again sometime. He's become quite a bit more well-known now, Tony Norman of the Post-Gazette. Okay, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back with more of the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR. Come back in just a moment or so, right after these words.
Hi, my name is Blaze, and I work at Compassionate Certification Centers. Having worked here for a while, I've realized that the most rewarding part of my job is offering relief to patients who thought it was no longer possible. Compassionate Certification Centers can help you get certified for your medical marijuana card in Pennsylvania. If you'd like to speak to someone at CCC, give us a call at 888-316-9085 or visit cccregister.com.
Sunnyview Nursing and Rehabilitation Center has a rich history in Butler. Now they are making continuous improvements and technological advancements to better serve the community. Sunnyview specializes in short-term rehabilitation and skilled nursing. Schedule a tour to see their beautiful facility. Call 332-6872 or visit sunnyviewcenter.com. Sunnyview Nursing and Rehabilitation Center, close to your home and close to your heart.
Welcome back, friends. Okay, as promised, we're going to be talking a little bit about Medicare and open enrollment period of Medicare. In fact, we're going to be chatting in just a moment here with Raymond Hurd, Ray Hurd, from Medicare.gov. We'll get some of the answers, hopefully, if you have any questions about open enrollment. And then still later on the program, we'll chat with Howard Green about... legendary railroad CEO Hunter Harrison. But before we hook up with Ray Hurd, quick note from one of our sponsors on the program today, and that's Gone Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. They're located just off Newcastle Road, behind King's and Villa Grande restaurants. That's in the Shockey Mini Storage Complex, right behind the restaurants there. Gone Postal Butler packages your items for shipping. So if you have something that needs shipped out, and you know, this can be a real... I can remember one time a year or so ago, I had something that I needed to mail to Illinois somewhere, and I couldn't find the right sized box, and you know, you're hunting for the bubble wrap and the peanuts and the mailing labels and all that stuff. Forget about it. You can just take your items to Gone Postal Butler, and they'll package it and ship it for you any way you want, by the way. UPS, FedEx, U.S. Postal Service, your choice. They'll package it up and ship it out. I've utilized their services. Very convenient, very affordable, and very fast, too. They also offer a copying service, scanning service, faxing service. You can rent a temporary mailbox at Gone Postal Butler. You can even pick up a jar of local honey there. Delicious. They're open Monday through Friday. Here's a phone number. Call if you need more info on their services. 724-841-0044. That's 724-841-0044. Gone Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. We are in, listeners, the period of open enrollment for Medicare, and we're going to talk about that and what it means with Ray Hurd. Ray is a spokesperson for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Ray Hurd, nice to have you with us here today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So a lot of folks would have been hearing these announcements on radio and TV over the past few weeks about Medicare open enrollment. Ray, just what does this mean for folks who might be confused about it?
So Medicare open enrollment period is when Medicare enrollees can review their different coverage options, whether it be with a health insurance plan or with a prescription drug plan, and try and find what best fits their needs and their finances.
And it's a limited time period to do that, am I right?
You are right. It runs from October 15th to December 7th every year. So it's time to take action and get it done before December 7th.
Mm-hmm. So it just started not too long ago, but December 7th will be here before we know it. After all, almost November, so time to start taking a look at this. Now, again, for people that are... you know, I just signed up for Medicare and they don't have any other particular supplemental plans, they're not affected, right?
Well, anyone that's in Medicare should take the opportunity to look and compare and see what may be available. So if you have traditional Medicare, it doesn't necessarily cover every health need. You know, I always go to vision or dental or health, which is not covered by traditional Medicare. Mm-hmm. If you have that need, you may be able to find a Medicare Advantage plan that has those supplemental benefits. The other thing to think about is cost. Sometimes traditional Medicare compared to a Medicare Advantage health insurance plan costs more over the course of the year. And if you go to Medicare.gov, you can estimate your Medicare costs with a tool right there that shows what your different costs may be.
Now, you mentioned Medicare Advantage. Is this a government program or is this done through private insurers?
So Medicare Advantage is done through private insurers. They contract with us through Medicare to help people manage their health insurance needs. So, you know, if you had a health insurance plan your whole life and you're comfortable, paying a premium and maybe a copayment when you go to the doctor's office, this might be a good option for you because you'll be familiar with the process.
Mm-hmm. What about people who have signed up for Medicare but they're still working?
So there's always different scenarios. I would say that if you have those types of questions, you call 1-800-MEDICARE and talk to a customer service rep, or they might refer you to a local state health insurance assistance program where you can sit down and talk to somebody, because if you're still working, you may not need a Medicare Advantage plan. But it's still the right time to go through your options and make sure that you're not making a mistake and you're doing what's best for you.
Are Medicare Advantage plans expensive, Ray Hurt?
No. So about, and if you look at statistics, 4 out of 5 people pay less than $50 a month in premiums for a Medicare Advantage plan.
So, and of course, that would depend on what you sign up for, I guess, right? The more benefits you sign up for, the more expensive it's going to be.
Could be. Again, it depends. That's why this is the time of year to shop and look at your different options. And if you don't do it before December 7th, you won't know.
What about Medicare? I'm thinking here to make sure I give you the right terminology. It's Medicare Part D. Is that the drug plan?
Yes. So traditional Medicare does not cover prescription drugs. So Medicare Part D is prescription drug coverage. Now, you can get a standalone prescription drug coverage plan, or the majority of the Medicare Advantage health insurance plans come with drug coverage built into them, so you don't have to worry about it.
But you can get a standalone through Medicare itself?
Yes, so you could have traditional Medicare and a standalone prescription drug plan that just covers your prescription drug needs.
Is that expensive?
Not necessarily. Again, the prescription drug plans are fairly inexpensive. I think the average is about $32.50 this year, $32.50 a month.
Mm-hmm. What about this donut hole that we hear people talking about every so often? What the heck is that all about? That's pretty complicated, isn't it?
It is pretty complicated. So the donut hole is a period where your prescription drugs aren't necessarily covered by your prescription drug plan, so they cost more out of pocket until you reach a catastrophic limit, and then the costs come down. Now, the Affordable Care Act helped us to address that. So we've really reduced the costs that come out of pocket for individuals while they're in what's called the donut hole.
Why do they call it the donut hole anyway?
Well, because you're covered to a certain period, and then you go into this period where you're not covered, and then you reach a cap and you're covered again. So there's like a hole in there where you're not covered.
Walk me through this a little bit, because I'm not sure that I'm clear on it. So you're covered for prescription drug costs up to a certain dollar amount? Is that what we're talking about?
It is up to a certain dollar amount, and I wish I had the dollar amount here in front of me so I could share that with you, but I don't. We can get that to you. But once you reach that dollar amount, you pay more out of pocket for your drugs until you reach what we call a catastrophic cap. And once you reach that catastrophic cap, then your drugs are covered again, and you pay a lower percentage.
So we're talking about open enrollment in Medicare. Ray Hurt is with us. He's a spokesperson for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. That's the official government agency, by the way, right? CMS?
Correct. CMS is the federal government agency that oversees the program.
The open enrollment period runs through December 7th. What happens if people miss the deadline, right?
If you miss the deadline, then you don't have an opportunity to change your options until the next open enrollment period, again, October 15th to December 7th every year.
So most people would have to wait a whole year, huh?
That's correct. You'd have to wait until next October before you can compare your options and make changes.
And again, we don't want to scare people. If you're satisfied with the plan that you have, you know, it's not going to go away. But if you want to change it, or if you want to explore the options to change it, you have to do that between now and December 7th, right?
Correct. So you may be happy in your plan, but it never hurts to explore the options. Again, you might find something that better meets your needs, that costs you less. Maybe a prescription you're taking has changed and your current plan doesn't cover it. You need to find one that does. Maybe some part of your health has changed and you need to see a specialist that isn't covered under your current plan, so you can look for a plan that does. And again, there's always those additional benefits in Medicare Advantage, like vision or dental or hearing, that you may be able to get covered.
Are there online resources available where people who have questions or who are a bit confused can go online and get answers and stuff?
Absolutely. So Medicare.gov is the online resource. You can compare your coverage options there. It will ask you five simple questions, and it will tell you what the best options may be for you, whether it be traditional Medicare, maybe a Medicare Advantage plan. And then you can estimate your Medicare costs, where it will show you what traditional Medicare may cost you based on your own health as opposed to a Medicare Advantage plan. And then if you want, you can actually compare plans while you're on Medicare.gov and enroll in a plan through Medicare.gov.
That's the website, Medicare.gov. Are there any local resources? Can people go to get local help in their own community, Ray?
Absolutely. So every state has a health insurance assistance program. If you call 1-800-MEDICARE, they will be able to either help you on the phone, you can ask your questions there and they can walk you through the process, or they can refer you to the local state health insurance assistance program where you can make an appointment and sit down with a trained counselor.
One final question. Is it still age 65 when people become eligible for Medicare in the U.S., age 65?
Yes, age 65 is when you age into Medicare.
I mentioned that because I know that the age for getting into Social Security is going up for people who were born after a certain date. That's up to 67, I think, now in some cases.
Correct. A lot of people defer their Social Security. So when you turn 65, you need to take action and make sure you enroll in Medicare because you don't want to miss your initial enrollment period.
Raymond Hurd, Ray Hurd, spokesperson for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Thanks, Ray. Appreciate your help today. Thanks much.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Sure. So long now. I hope that will help to clear up some confusion or answer some of the questions you may have had about open enrollment. We hear a lot about it these days through direct mail and TV commercials and radio commercials and everything else. Raymond Hurd visiting with us. Hope you can stay tuned. We're going to be talking about legendary railroad boss, CEO. And by the way, we're not talking about back in the era of the, you know, the Rockefellers and the Andrew Carnegies. We're talking about relatively recent. Hunter Harrison is the man we're going to be talking about. And he just died last year after heading up four different railroads in the U.S. and Canada. Howard Green will be our next guest. He's written a biography of Hunter Harrison, and we'll be chatting with Howard here momentarily. One of our sponsors on the program today is Butler Motor Tours. They have a couple of trips coming up, day trips over the holiday period that I think you might be interested in. First of all, a chance to go to Ogle Bay Park for the Festival of Lights down there. That's in West Virginia. A lot of folks you know, might like to go there, but they're not all that thrilled about driving to West Virginia in December and then having to drive back late at night. Well, take the bus. Take one of the luxury coaches from Butler Motor Tours. They're taking a trip down to the Ogle Bay Park Festival of Lights on December 8th. The cost is $87. Listen to what it includes. Your coach transportation down to West Virginia, full dinner at Wheeling Park, mansion tour, carriage house, glass museum, the Good Zoo Winter Fantasy, the laser light show, and a guided tour of the lights, and then back home. So that's a pretty good bargain. That's December 8th. More details online at their website, butlerbus.com. And also, they're taking a trip December 12th. This is another holiday treat. Country Christmas Traditions and Overly Christmas Lights. Now, this is in Ligonier. This trip includes transportation, coach transportation down to Ligonier. Full lunch, Ligonier, by the way, a beautiful town in the Laurel Highlands, the Laurel Mountains. Coach transportation, full lunch, country music Christmas show, musical show, shopping in Ligonier, the Old General Store, Country Pie Shop with free mini pie for all, and then Overly's Country Christmas Lights. All of that. And the trip departs at 8:30 in the morning on December 12th from Butler Motor Transit on South Monroe Street here in Butler. And that's just a couple of things coming up. Day trips you might be interested in as we approach the holiday season. Butler Motor Tours, a company that's been around here for more than 75 years now, taking folks from our area to places near and far for a day or two or a week or two. All information online at butlerbus.com, butlerbus.com.
It's never been more important to stay in touch with the events and issues that shape our world. And for more than 25 years, Radio Pennsylvania has been the Commonwealth's source for stories and newsmakers impacting your life.
We're taking precautions to prepare for the worst that this storm can deliver.
And I believe that we need an armed, highly trained security officer in every school.
We should not be using mental illness as a scapegoat for things like mass shootings and violence.
Covering your state capital and all corners of the Commonwealth, Radio PA's team of award-winning journalists is on constant watch as your eyes and ears on the front lines of the major events of our time. Honored for broadcasting and journalistic excellence by
the Associated Press, the Pennsylvania Association of Broadcasters, the National Association of State Radio Networks, the National Headliner Awards, and many others.
Eight-time winner of the Joe Snyder Award for Outstanding News Service, the top news honor bestowed by the Associated Press in Pennsylvania. The Radio Pennsylvania Network, bringing you closer to Harrisburg and all of your Keystone State.
Welcome, listeners, on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. My name is Dave Malarkey, by the way. If you're joining us a little bit late on the program, we're going to talk about railroads today in general, but specifically about a railroader who is a CEO of four different railroads. His name is E. Hunter Harrison, and there's a new biography out about him by Howard Green, and Howard joins us on the next segment of It's Your Turn here from Toronto, Canada. Howard Green, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Dave. And before we start, I just would like to express my condolences to the city of Pittsburgh and in particular the Squirrel Hill community for the dreadful thing that occurred over the weekend. My condolences.
Oh, well, I appreciate you mentioning that. We are definitely in a state of mourning here in western Pennsylvania still. Hard to believe the horror of all of that. And today they're just starting the funerals of the folks who were murdered. A terrible thing.
Well, there are a lot of people here thinking about you all. I can tell you that.
It's nice to know that. Well, let's talk about this gentleman. Howard, I must confess, until I saw your book, I'd never heard of E. Hunter Harrison. But if you're in the railroad business, he was pretty big. He was a pretty big name, right?
He was a pretty big name, and in a sense, he was the Steve Jobs of railroading. He didn't invent an Apple computer, nor did he invent railroads, but he developed a way to make those networks, which date back to the 1800s, much more efficient. Mm-hmm. And he ran four of them. He ran four publicly traded railroads. I mean, I can't think of anybody who's run four publicly traded companies or four publicly traded railroads, at least in the modern era, and done it so successfully, creating enormous shareholder value and a lot of controversy along the way. Hunter was kind of an in-your-face guy. He was a non-status quo guy. He never backed down from a fight. He knew what he wanted to do, and he did it no matter what.
By the way, folks, Hunter Harrison was an American, so why are we talking to an esteemed broadcaster in Toronto about him? Well, one of the four railroads that he ran was the Canadian National Railway, known as CN, right?
That's right. Well, he ran two here, actually. Well, initially, he started in Memphis. He was a Memphis boy. He was a bad kid growing up in Memphis. He found his salvation working in the railroad when he was 19, pouring oil into the axles of wheels of cars in the Memphis yard. Worked his way up, developed ideas, you know, better ideas for how to run railroads than anybody else, ultimately found himself running Illinois Central in the 1990s out of Chicago, a historic railroad running from New Orleans to, from Chicago to New Orleans, down essentially down the Mississippi, the heart of the continent. Canadian National, a huge Canadian railroad, but also North American, you know, one of the big six in North America, bought Illinois Central in 1998, and that's how Hunter ended up in Canada. So I actually titled Chapter 5 of the book, Memphis Meets Montreal, and it was quite a meeting. You know, Hunter was he could talk for hours, and the first time he was introduced to the top staff of Canadian National in Montreal, nobody could leave the room to urinate for hours because Hunter just did not stop talking, and everybody was afraid to leave the room. He was just that kind of guy. He could hold a room like nobody else. His dad was a lay preacher, and Hunter inherited a lot of that from his father.
By the way, he just died, right, late last year?
He did. He died December 16th. He was running his fourth railroad then, CSX Corp., which runs up the eastern United States, and I believe through the Pittsburgh area as well.
It does.
Pardon me?
I say it does, yeah.
Yeah, and he was 73 years old. He was on oxygen while he was running that railroad. He had a very serious lung condition, and he ran it for 9 months, and the company is now worth in the neighborhood of $56 billion. It had been as high as, $60-odd billion in the summer before the market started to go down, but it was about $33 billion when his name was first mentioned in association with CSX in January of 2017. He went there after Canadian Pacific, which was the next railroad after Canadian National, which I just told you about. He just went from one to the next. He couldn't stop working. He was bored by being retired. He wanted to work until the bitter end, and he did. They put him on medical leave December 14th, and he died on December 16th. And I was with him about 10 days before he died, and he was in pretty rough shape, and it was hard to watch somebody deteriorate over that last year of his life. But he was running that railroad, CSX, which, as you say, runs through your area there in Pittsburgh, while he was in his pajamas and housecoat and slippers.
Wow.
In his home office in Florida. That's how he ran that huge American corporation,
and
while he was attached to an oxygen machine. It was just an astonishing thing to watch, and I sat with him there at the house witnessing it firsthand. He was a turnaround artist, and he did that at Illinois Central. He did it at Canadian National. He went to Canadian Pacific, and then he came back to the U.S. for his finale running CSX. I think he always wanted to run a big American railroad, and he did it at the end.
By the way, at all of these railroads, folks, he was either CEO or president, or in some cases both. So he was the top dog at all of these railroads. As Howard said, probably no one else can say that they ran four huge publicly traded railroads and really turn them all around. It's hard for us to keep track of so many mergers in railroads, Howard, over the past couple of decades. Well, as you mentioned, CSX, that incorporates part of what used to be the Chessie system. And when I was a little kid, even before that, the B&O, the Baltimore and Ohio, which ran through my little hometown along the Allegheny River. But they've all been merged now, haven't they?
Well, yeah, and you know, it's interesting that the B&O, we all probably played Monopoly when we were kids, and even us Canadians, and so we knew the B&O, Baltimore and Ohio, and that was really the roots of CSX. And the mergers really took place in the first three quarters of the 20th century. You know, really up until, you know, well, that century, the 20th century, and CSX was the product, or is the product, of a dizzying number of mergers. I can't remember them all. And, of course, Burlington Northern and Santa Fe, which is now BNSF, owned by Warren Buffett, that occurred in the 90s. Union Pacific and Southern Pacific became the modern Union Pacific today, again in the 90s. But that all pretty much stopped after CN bought Illinois Central in 1998. CN also tried to buy Burlington Northern in 2000 when Hunter was there, and it was blocked by the U.S. Surface Transportation Board, which is the national regulator in the United States, and there has not been a major railroad merger or takeover consolidation since then in 18 years. And Hunter tried to do it when he was at Canadian Pacific. He tried to buy, first they tried to buy CSX, they tried to buy Norfolk Southern, the other big railroad in east of the Mississippi in the United States, and Norfolk Southern beat them at the Washington politics game. Hunter was one of those guys who just thought he was right no matter what, and he didn't believe in optics or, you know, sucking up to politicians. He thought if it was a good business case, then people would get it. Well, they didn't get it. They turned him down, he was very frustrated by that. He thought consolidation, a combination of CP and Norfolk Southern, could alleviate a lot of congestion that occurs in the North American railroad system, particularly in Chicago, where all the railroads meet, and the Mississippi's there, and the lake's there, everything comes through there. And he thought, you know, you can run a lot of freight through Kansas City or St. Louis or Buffalo if you put these companies together, but nobody was buying it. He thought, he's no longer with us, that eventually it would happen, that there would be a Western Railroad merge with an Eastern Railroad, BNSF and Union Pacific in the West, Norfolk Southern, CSX in the East. He thought that eventually it'll be a necessity just to deal with capacity issues and congestion issues, but it wouldn't be during his era. It would be during someone else's.
And in your book, Howard Green, Railroader, you talk a lot about some of the intrigue and the politics involved in a lot of this stuff, right?
Oh yeah, there was intrigue everywhere Hunter went. Hunter was, you know, he spoke his mind. He could only say what was on his mind. He was inflammatory at times. He was intimidating at times. He was also charming and generous and funny. But he rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. I mean, at the same time, he coached and mentored a lot of people. But there were fights wherever he went. The board at Canadian National got sick of him and told him at the end of 2009, we don't need you anymore. He was deeply hurt by that. He carried that grudge until the last days of his life. You know, my last interview with him was 10 days before he died, and he talked about that. You know, he couldn't shake that. He felt it was a betrayal. And then there was a huge fight to put him in as CEO of Canadian Pacific here, which is a historic railroad in this country, bound the country together in the 1800s, late 1800s, east to west, and kind of like the Hudson's Bay Company, a historic railroad here. And it was run by a blue-chip Canadian board, and it was like, oh, my God, Hunter Harrison's coming back to Canada, and a bunch of New York hedge fund guys are bringing him back? No way. And there was a huge fight, but he won, and there he was. And then there was, controversy to put him in at CSX. As soon as his name was mentioned as a possible CEO of CSX on January 18th, 2017, the stock shot up 23% overnight because just the mere mention that this guy might come to run this underperforming railroad, shareholders were like gaga over this. And then the board was in a total jam. Well, what do? We don't want to be embarrassed like the guys at Canadian Pacific for trying to keep him out. Got to make a deal with this guy. And it took about 6 weeks, but they did, and there he was running CSX while he was attached to Oxy. And, you know, they knew he had health problems. They knew he was 72, 73 years old. But they kind of were boxed in, and they had to hire him. And, it's turned out well for shareholders. You know, number of people laid off. There are always costs to these things. And he was never afraid to do the unpopular thing. So, you know, there really was thunder and lightning everywhere this guy went, even from when he was a kid. Until his last days, he was a feisty, feisty character. I've never met anybody like him. I think there should be a movie about him. The people come to mind like Tommy Lee Jones. That's the kind of person I think who could play him in a movie, or a Robert Duvall kind of figure. It was just a rich, rich story, you know, with the character, plot, issues, and the context of the railroads.
So many people here in the United States have a fascination with railroads, even people that I dare say never rode a train, because unfortunately we don't have too many left here in the U.S. But people remain fascinated. I mean, they have model railroads that they bring out during the holidays every year. There are programs on PBS about railroads and model railroads, and there's always this fascination. Listen, I have to take a quick break here, but we've got a little bit more time with Howard Green, so please stick with us on It's Your Turn. We'll be back to pick up our conversation about his book, Railroader, right after these words.
For more than 130 years, the name Concordia has meant quality care. Today, Concordia Visiting Nurses has provided high-quality, skilled nursing and a variety of therapy services to people in and around our community. Concordia Visiting Nurses is here to foster your recovery right in your own home. If you're in need of home health care, choose Concordia Visiting Nurses. Call toll-free at 1-877-352-6200.
Welcome back. I'm Dave Malarkey. Our guest is Howard Green, and we're talking to him in Toronto about his recently published book, Railroader, The Unfiltered Genius and Controversy of Four-Time Railroad CEO Hunter Harrison. Here in Western Pennsylvania and the Pittsburgh area, Howard Green, we are not unfamiliar with the Top Guns CEOs who are controversial, genius, but controversial. I mean, if you go back to the early days of the steel and the rail industry here, we had Henry Clay Frick and Andrew Carnegie, both very, very controversial, kind of in the mold, I guess, of Hunter Harrison. You know those guys, right? Henry Clay Frick, Andrew Carnegie?
Yes, yes, and quite tied into railroads as well, yes. You know, with the steel industry. Tough guys, all of them. Nobody becomes the CEO of a big publicly traded corporation without having sharp elbows, and some of them are sharper than others, and Hunter's were certainly very sharp. And as I said earlier, he was one of those people who was willing to do the unpopular thing. And, he's still extraordinarily unpopular in certain quarters in Canada for the things that he did in order to make CN and CP more efficient and more valuable for shareholders. And by the way, I should mention that the largest shareholder to this day, and this has been true for a very long time, the largest shareholder of CN to this day is none other than Bill Gates.
Huh.
There's a legal limit to the ownership of Canadian National because of the privatization law, which went into effect in 1995, and it's 15%, and Bill Gates owns 15% of Canadian National. It's one of his biggest investments, so his investment in an $80 billion company is probably somewhere around $12 billion of his net worth is in Canadian National. Hunter Harrison made Bill Gates a hell of a lot of money. With his holding in Canadian National. That's just a sidebar there. But look, these are tough guys, and he was willing to be unpopular. You know, he was willing to, go into the mailroom and... sorry, I just dropped the phone. Are you still there?
I'm still here, yes.
He went into the mailroom at Canadian Pacific, and he scared the hell out of the woman running the mailroom. He said, "What's that box doing on the scale?" With a computer in it, and it says it's going to FedEx. And she says, "Well, it's going to the yard across the city here in Calgary." And he said, "Young lady, do you know where a box goes to when it's shipped by FedEx? It goes to Memphis." And she had no idea. And he said, "I can put that box in the trunk of my car and get it over to that yard in 8 minutes. Don't be sending it by FedEx." So he would send messages through people at the company that there was another sheriff, a new sheriff in town. He knew the business so in such granular fashion, from having worked his way up, that as the top union leader here in Canada said, you can't BS him. He knows your job. And he would tell you how to do your job. So he was very tough, and he was willing to do the unpopular thing. You know, but as I say in the book, that took a piece out of him emotionally, because all of us as human beings, I think, want to be liked or loved. And, you know, I think Hunter was no different in that way, but he was also prepared to do the unpopular thing in order to achieve the results that he thought were necessary. And at the same time, he was an unbelievable coach and mentor. If you showed, no matter what level you were in the organization, if you showed the, you know, some sort of glimmer of interest in improving and learning, he would spend a huge amount of time with lower-level employees teaching them how to run a railroad, how to be leaders. And he would reward people. He would treat people very well if they performed. But it was black or white with Hunter. You know, there were no shades of gray. Either you were on board or you weren't. And if you weren't on board, you got one chance to shape up. And if you didn't, that was it. He was very, very tough.
We've talked, our guest Howard Green has mentioned several times CN, Canadian National Railway. Here in Western Pennsylvania, a lot of folks visit your country, Howard. In fact, our family many, many times travels up to Niagara-on-the-Lake to the Shaw Festival there. In fact, I can remember taking my binoculars up there one time and seeing if I could see the CN Tower across Lake Ontario from Niagara-on-the-Lake.
Sometimes you can on a clear day, and I can actually see the CN Tower from the top deck of my house here. And when you're up on the tower on a clear day, you can certainly see Rochester, and you can see Niagara Falls from up there. It's an amazing view. But I have fond memories of Pittsburgh, I should tell you, that when I was there in 1979, the day after the Pirates won the World Series, and the song on the radio that day was "We Are Family."
Yes, that's by Sister Sledge. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's how old I am.
Listeners, I should have told you a little earlier, and I apologize about Howard Green. He is a celebrated broadcast journalist, best known perhaps as the founding anchor at Canada's Business News Network. And he spent many years prior to that as a correspondent, a producer, a director, making programs for a variety of networks, not only the CBC, that's the Canadian Broadcast Corporation, but for PBS as well. So he's an experienced journalist. And how long did it take you? I know you did a lot of research on Hunter Harrison before this book was written. Howard, how long did it take you? How long did you work on it?
Well, I knew Hunter for 13 or 14 years, going back to when he was CEO of CN and then CP, and I'd interviewed him on the program that you mentioned, or the network that you mentioned, and we stayed in touch, and we talked on the phone, and so forth. And but probably in earnest about 2 years, almost 2 years, we started working on it in earnest, I guess, the latter part of 2016, and it was just published last month, so it was probably, about 2 years, I guess. And I spent a lot of time with him the last year of his life. Probably did about 170 hours of interviews with him alone. And then a similar amount with people he had worked with throughout his life, his family, friends, critics, other executives, and so forth. And then a lot of documents from all of these railroads, multiple publicly traded companies. So there are a lot of regulatory documents, SEC documents, and so forth to get facts and all that kind of stuff. So it's a lot, but I think it's I'm biased, but I think it's a hell of a story. And whether you're interested in railroads or not, just from a human point of view, what this guy achieved and the obstacles that he faced, and the people that he fought with, and the lessons that are learned from it.
Speaking of the human point of view, did he have many friends? I mean, he was a very brash American. He was a self-described bully as a child. Did he have many friends as an adult?
It's interesting. You know, he told me a number of times he didn't have many friends. He had many disciples at the companies that he worked with, people who he trained and coached and mentored and so forth. But he said the higher he went up the managerial pole, once he was a CEO at Illinois Central, he felt like he couldn't socialize with people the way he did because they worked for him and he had to tell them what to do, and it became awkward. And over the years, he felt that he didn't have that many friends. However, I will tell you that at his memorial service, which was actually called a celebration of life last January in Florida, there were about 700 people. And so I think there were friends. There were a lot of people who respected and admired him, but he wasn't in touch all the time. He wasn't the kind of guy you'd just go out for a beer with. You know, he would have long dinners with his employees and his executive ranks and so forth, and certainly his family. The folks associated with equestrian, which was a big passion of his life as well. He wasn't the kind of guy you just go for a beer with. And so I was really privileged to spend the amount of time that I spent with him close up, hearing what he had to say, questioning him, getting in arguments with him. You know, he's no longer with us, but I said at the book launch here in Toronto, you know, he's still so vivid in my mind. I can hear his voice, that strong Tennessee accent. But I know if he were here, that he'd argue with me about the book, because he was one of those guys. He just would argue with you no matter what. That was just who he was. But at the end, he'd kind of, you know, go, all right, okay, that's fair. That was the end of it, you know, and we'd move on. But it was fascinating to, you know, be that up close with somebody, and a privilege to be trusted with a life story. And I hope lots of people read the book.
Are there still passenger trains in Canada? We have very few here in the United States. We have some freight lines, but even those are down a lot. Are there still passenger trains in Canada?
Yeah. Hunter was a freight guy, but there are passenger trains. You know, I'm in Toronto. If I want to take the passenger train to Montreal, it's 4 or 5 hours. You know, I could take it to Halifax on the East Coast or Vancouver on the West Coast if I wanted. I don't know how long it takes these days, but there is an enormously beautiful ride, incredible ride through the Rockies in the dome car. And you can sit there and have a drink and watch the Rockies go by, take the train from Calgary to Vancouver, Vancouver to Calgary. I have not done it, but I understand it's one of the great train rides in the world. That you can take, but I think there's a desire to have a lot more passenger rail. A lot of people wish for high speed rail. If we had high speed rail between Quebec City and Windsor, which is across the river from Detroit, I think a lot of people would be happy. But then the airlines would be a bit upset about it. But more and more folks are interested in rail. I think it's just enormously difficult to incredibly difficult to get big infrastructure projects done and paid for these days. Mm-hmm. But certainly Toronto needs more subway trains, I can tell you that. We're short of those.
I can't let you go without asking one thing. Here I am talking to a celebrated Canadian journalist and broadcaster, and we're talking about railroads. I've got to mention one of my true singer-songwriter heroes, Gordon Lightfoot from Ontario, who, in fact, one of the first tunes I ever heard from Gordon Lightfoot, and this goes all the way back to my undergraduate days when I was in college. It was called Canadian Railroad Trilogy, and it was a long song. It's about 6 or 7 minutes long, about the building of the Transcontinental Railroad across Canada, and I still love the tune. Up the St. Lawrence on the way to Gaspé, swinging our hammers and drawing our pay. You know that song, don't you, Howard?
No, fantastic. I heard Lightfoot perform in Ottawa many years ago, and he just performed here in Toronto at the historic Massey Hall, which goes back to the late 1800s. It's closed for 2 years for renovations, but he was the last guy to perform because his concerts at Massey Hall are famous. And actually, my late sister used to go every year to hear him And she would, because we're from Nova Scotia, and she would request the song Farewell to Nova Scotia, which is a beautiful, beautiful seafaring song, and breaks your heart. And Gordon Lightfoot would do it. He would take my sister's request, and he would do it every time. And that she had asked, and marvelous performer, and he is still performing, although I think he's about 80 now.
Yeah. Howard Green has been our guest, and I've kept him too long, but Howard, you seldom develop an instant rapport with somebody that you'd never spoken with before, especially over the telephone, but I sense that here chatting with you today, and I'm so happy we were able to talk. Howard Green, the author of Railroader, that's the title, Railroader, the unfiltered genius and controversy of four-time CEO Hunter Harrison. Howard, a delight. Thanks for being with us today.
A delight for me as well, Dave. Many, many thanks for having me, and all the best.
All right. Good day to you now. So long.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Interesting story about the railroader. I've always been fascinated by a railroad since I was a little kid, as I mentioned to Howard there. By the way, what a nice guy, huh? Talking to us from Toronto. When I was a kid, actually, even though I lived in a very small town, my childhood years, Parker, and along the Allegheny River, there were actually two major rail lines that that went through Parker. One was the B&O, the Baltimore and Ohio, which ran on the west side, up the west side of the Allegheny River. And then on the other side, once again right next to the river, was the Pennsylvania Railroad, which later became the Penn Central. And the B&O, four miles or so north of Parker, crossed the Allegheny River on that famous double-decker bridge, the old Foxburg Bridge, that carried vehicular traffic on the lower level and a train on the upper level. That bridge is gone, of course. They blew it up, must be close to 10 years ago now. They built a new bridge up there. Well, anyway, fascination with railroads. Wish we had more of them, especially passenger trains here in the U.S. We have more to come. We're going to be talking about two names that I'm pretty sure you've heard of, Mark Twain and Teddy Roosevelt. Coming up on the next segment of It's Your Turn, we'll be chatting with Philip McFarland, historian Philip McFarland. One of our sponsors on the program is Hearing Aid Service by Kelly, where you'll find a personalized, and I do mean personalized, one-on-one care. Kelly will take the time to make sure that everything is just the way you want it from a hearing standpoint, obviously. Be able to hear better, but comfortable, too. How many of you know people who have a hearing aid but don't wear it because it hurts or it's uncomfortable? You won't find that with Kelly. Your hearing aid will actually be measured to fit your ear. Listen, Kelly is interested in helping you hear better. She is not interested in selling you the highest-priced hearing aid. In fact, you're likely to save thousands because there's no overhead. And that's right, you could save thousands. There's a complimentary consultation. All you have to do is call the hearing aid lady and she'll set that up. The phone number is 724-756-4327. 724-756-4327. People who have made the change or consulted with Kelly are so happy that they did. And they can hear a lot better, too. For personalized one-on-one care, Hearing Aid Service by Kelly, call the hearing aid lady at 724-756-4327. One of our other sponsors on the program is the Society of St. Vincent de Paul Thrift Store. We want to mention today, and here we are one day before Halloween. And if you're looking for a Halloween costume for you or for anybody else in the family, you know, a quick stop at the Society of St. Vincent Paul Thrift Store might not be a bad idea. They're located in the Greater Butler Mart, right on Route 8, just south of Butler. You know where they are, Greater Butler Mart. And they've got lots of clothes in there, and shoes and everything else that you might be able to use to put together a costume at the last minute. Meanwhile, if you're cleaning in advance of the holidays or moving or downsizing, please consider donating any unwanted items to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul Thrift Store. Every penny that comes from the operation of that store stays right here in Butler County to support their food bank and their client aid program. So please consider donating clothing, shoes, furniture, household items to the thrift store. They're open Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. And if you have a lot of stuff or big stuff like a furniture set or something like that, you call them and they'll come pick it up in the truck. 287-8682. We stand the tallest when we stoop to help others. That's what they like to say at the Society of St. Vincent de Paul Thrift Store, Greater Butler Mart, Route 8, just south of Butler.
That's one of the more recognizable doo-wop songs, recorded by Frank Sinatra, Bing Crosby, even Elvis. But most well-known is sung by the legendary Marcells. See them perform live at Tanglewood, your hometown center for entertainment, Saturday, November 10th. Doors open at 6. BYOB dinner by Chef George at 7. Showtime at 8. Tickets, $25. Call 287-0021 for reservations.
Listeners, welcome, first of all, on this segment of It's Your Turn. Nice to have you with us. Dave Malarkey is my name, if you're joining us a little bit late. We're going to be talking about two of the most well-known names in American history today. One is Mark Twain, the other is Theodore Roosevelt. Our guest visits with us by telephone. He is author Philip McFarland. Mr. McFarland, nice to meet you. I'm glad we're able to talk for a few minutes here today.
Well, I'm very, very pleased to be with you.
We want to talk about your book. The title is Mark Twain and the Colonel. Subtitle, Samuel Clemens, Theodore Roosevelt, and the Arrival of a New Century. Well, let's talk a little bit about this era, and we're about 100 years back in history. What some people may not realize, they may remember years ago when we were getting ready to enter a new millennium, how everyone was all fired up about that, and it was, oh, wow, we're going out of the 1900s and into the 2000s. The same thing was happening 100 years ago, wasn't it, whenever we turned the previous century?
That's part of why I got interested in writing the book, because I think many of us at the time wondered what was going on 100 years ago. I knew that my mother had been a child back then, and that my grandmother was a young housewife, and I knew something about her life, my grandmother's life, because we used to visit her in southern Ohio a great deal when I was young, and she lived to be 91, so I knew her well, although she set up housekeeping way back in the times we were just speaking of, toward the beginning of end of the 19th century and beginning of the 20th century.
You mention, Philip, in your book, Mark Twain and the Colonel, two watershed events that occurred right around the turn of the century and which continued to influence Americans for the better part of the next 100 years. One of them was the separate but equal Supreme Court decision, right?
The Supreme Court decision in 1896, Plessy versus Ferguson, and that declared legal the whole idea of segregating the black race from the white race, and what was to be provided was separate but equal accommodations, schools, restaurants, and so on. Of course, as it developed, the possibility of it being equal was just non-existent. The segregation in the South continued, and to some extent, unofficially to a fairly large extent, unofficially in the North, but officially in the South, the Jim Crow laws that segregated the black race from the white race continued until 1954.
Yes, we lived under that.
They were declared unconstitutional by Brown versus Education.
Mm-hmm. And then the civil rights legislation came the following decade. The other major event, and boy, for a lot of us, it was an eye-opener for me. When I was reading your book, I had forgotten about that. The United States has been a world power for so long, and since the collapse of the former Soviet Union, the one significant world power, but we were not for the first 100 years or so of our existence.
we really became a world power only because of war around the turn of the century, around 1900.
Yes, that was in 1898. It was not a long war. It was a very brief war of 2 weeks where we fought the Spanish to remove them from Cuba, which was 95 miles off our coast, and where there was an insurgency that had been going on for years and years to throw off the Spanish yoke. And finally, through a succession of events, we got involved in that and successfully prosecuted the war, making Theodore Roosevelt a national hero, giving him his title colonel, which he adored above all others, adored it above the title of President Roosevelt. He was more proud of that than he was of any other of the many titles he earned in his lifetime. As a result of the war, we almost inadvertently gained possession of the Philippine Islands, and not knowing quite what to do with them, they had been under the Spanish yoke for 300 years. We first thought we would just have take one of the islands to provide coal for the ships, for our ships that were sailing to the Far East, coaling station. But in the end, we took the whole archipelago, and the result was a great divisive issue in the United States. Those who were pro-acquiring this foreign colony and those who were against it. Mark Twain was very much against it, as were many other distinguished names of the time, but the great sentiment of the American people at large was for acquiring what Mark Twain insisted was an empire in imitation of the European powers, which at the time were busily acquiring empires of their own in Indochina and Africa and Asia.
We're talking, for listeners who may have joined us a few minutes late on this segment of It's Your Turn. Welcome. Dave Malarkey is my name. Our guest visits with us by telephone today. He is historian and author Philip McFarland. We're talking about his latest book, Mark Twain and the Colonel. Well, we've mentioned how Theodore Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt, ties into this picture with America becoming a national power. He, of course, was a war hero from the Spanish-American War. 3 years later, he's president. How does Mark Twain fit in at this time of in our history around the turn of the century? Mark Twain actually had been living abroad, hadn't he, for the better part of 10 years, Philip?
That's right. He had suffered economic reverses. He had invested a great deal of money in a machine to set type, and it had proved an impractical machine. After all, the expense and the time spent developing it, so that he lost all his money and had to retire from his mansion in Hartford, Connecticut, and sail abroad, where he lived from June 1891 until October 1900. When he returned from overseas, he got back just at the as we were entering an election era. In fact, we were just weeks from the election of 1900, which put William McKinley back into the White House for a second term, and in the course of the time that remained, McKinley acquired this Philippine Islands extension of the American holdings, and before he became or he fell to the assassin's bullet in 1901, and Roosevelt by then was propelled to the White House because he was McKinley's vice president.
And he took over.
That's how Roosevelt got to the White House. He was the youngest that we've ever had before or since who entered the White House. He was 42 years old, and he was very much for acquiring Philippines as a protectorate of the United States. What Mark Twain was objecting to was that this was betraying all of the American ideals. You govern by the consent of the governed, and the Filipinos had not given that consent. You treated everybody as equals. Of course, we always have to accept at the time the blacks, but who were not the African Americans, who were not being treated equally. They were being shamefully discriminated against. But the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence had values in them that said we treated everybody equally, and the Filipinos were not being treated equally. They were being treated as subjects. Mm-hmm. So Mark Twain objected to that. America was a continental nation that ended at the Pacific and the Atlantic Oceans, and here we were violating that understanding for the first time, acquiring lands 7,000 miles away, and people who knew nothing about our values of freedom of the press, of freedom of assembly, trial by jury, and so on, who were of a different religion. They were Roman Catholic. They spoke a different language, Spanish, and so on.
Let me take a quick break here. Our time begins to run short. We have a few more minutes that we can chat with Philip McFarland, but I have to take a quick break here and sneak in a message or two. We'll be back to continue our conversation here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick two is 5656. The pick three is 423-423. The pick four, 1651. The pick five, 45286. The wild ball for each of those is four. The treasure hunt, 6, 11, 13, 19, and 22. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $26,000.
After a wildly successful road trip across Canada, the Pittsburgh Penguins return home to meet the New York Islanders on Tuesday night at PPG Paints Arena. We'll have the game for you, beginning with a pregame show at 6:30, puck drop at 7, as the Penguins meet the New York Islanders for the first time this season on the Penguins Radio Network.
Pittsburgh Penguins hockey brought to you in part by Cash Dollar & Associates, Thrower Concrete, Monday's Shoes, Camisa's Auto Body, Butler Agway, and Schneider's 1-Hour Heating and Air Conditioning.
Welcome back, listeners. My name is Dave Malarkey. If you're joining us a little bit late on It's Your Turn, we're talking this segment with historian and author Philip McFarland. We're talking about his book, Mark Twain and the Colonel. We've heard a good bit about the background, and it took us a while to set the stage for the real meat and potatoes of Philip McFarland's book. First of all, these two men, although they disagreed philosophically on a number of issues, as you have explained, Philip, they knew each other. In fact, they were very well acquainted, were they not?
They were, and Mark Twain was much impressed by Roosevelt as a human being. He said, "Mr. Roosevelt is one of the most likable men that I am acquainted with." And Mark Twain was acquainted with just about everybody. Who wouldn't want to be the friend of Mark Twain's? And Roosevelt, like everybody else, admired Mark Twain enormously and had no idea of Roosevelt's private thoughts about Mark Twain's private thoughts about Roosevelt in the White House.
So they didn't speak publicly about their differences.
No, never. They conducted themselves with great decorum. But there was a time when Roosevelt said he would like to skin Mark Twain alive, and since Roosevelt was taxidermically sophisticated, he shot birds as a child and learned to stuff them. He was a great ornithologist as a young man, and so when he talked about skinning somebody alive, you took it a little seriously. But what he was objecting to was what Mark Twain had written about the missionaries abroad in the Far East, who Mark Twain had no use for. He felt missionaries shouldn't be, easy to get into this, but he felt missionaries shouldn't be persuading children about beliefs and so on, and that once again that we shouldn't be meddling in foreign lands, and Roosevelt felt differently about that. But generally Roosevelt admired Mark Twain enormously. He loved Huckleberry Finn, he loved Tom Sawyer, he loved Life on the Mississippi, and he was delighted to have Mark Twain as a friend. And every time Mark Twain met Roosevelt, he said, every time he shook his hand, an electric charge ran up his arm, and he was an irresistible human being. But he did feel that Roosevelt, as chief executive, was leading us down the wrong path, and was leading us into empire, and democracy and empire don't mix. And that was his major stumbling block, and what led him to write that Roosevelt was, and this is a quote, was far and away the worst president we have ever had. He didn't want that read until he had been dead 100 years, when he authorized it in his autobiography. But in fact, it came into print in 1940, 60 years early, or 50 years early, and while many of the Roosevelts were still alive, and they were very hurt to hear what Mark Twain had written about their adored father and husband.
Were both of these men we hear many times about people who are very well known today who were not so during their lifetimes, but that was not the case with these two men. They were both celebrated, they were both famous, they were both extremely well known at the time, were they not?
That's an interesting point, and that is absolutely true. Of course, Roosevelt, as a politician, had a great many who were opposed to him, enemies professionally, but Mark Twain had almost none, except when he took this anti-imperialistic stance. And then there were some who objected to that because they considered him unpatriotic, and yet they excused it because they thought of him as a humorist and didn't take him seriously, which vexed him a good bit. But you're quite right that both Mark Twain and Roosevelt were extremely well known and well liked during their lifetime, and their reputation remains, if anything, higher than it was at the time of their death.
Philip, I must mention, our time begins to run short here, but I must mention some of your previous works, because this book that we're talking about today, listeners, Mark Twain and the Colonel, is simply the latest in a distinguished series, actually, of American biographies and histories by Philip McFarlane. And as I look down through the list of your previous books, boy, I see two or three of them that I'd love to read. Are all of these still in print, Philip?
Well, certainly the book on Hawthorne and the book on Harriet Beecher Stowe would be, and I assume the book on the American Revolution called The Brave Bostonians.
Well, those were exactly
would still be in print.
Those were the three that I were looking at.
The others could be found in online at used book places, I'm told, because people every now and then ask me about it, and I guide them to that, and they return with a smile on their face, so I assume they found it. But I can't speak for the books that came out quite a while ago. But in any case, I'm grateful for your mention, and it was because I had written the book on Hawthorne and on Harriet Beecher Stowe that I thought a nice companion volume on Mark Twain would be would fit in quite well as we move through the 19th century into our into what was then our own century. I started the book in 1999 or so, this current book. That was what got me to write to the subject of Mark Twain. And then I came upon that remarkable judgment of one of our great presidents, that he was the worst we've ever had, and I wondered why Mark Twain thought that way. And when I when I pursued it, I spent a long time researching and writing the book, and I became just absolutely absorbed with how up-to-date all of those issues that were being dealt with at the time remain to us today.
Absolutely. And the two central characters
remain... Oh, absolutely. They are totally... totally absorbing. They had an opinion on every issue, every subject of the time, and could express their thoughts so articulately and so vividly. It was just a joy. And they took different viewpoints on a whole lot of the issues. So you got quite a comprehensive understanding of the issues and the fascinating characters of the time, Rockefeller, Carnegie, Morgan, the Wright brothers, Henry Ford, George Westinghouse, Edison, all of these run through the book.
And all of this happening at approximately the same time, toward the end of, right before and right after the turn of the century, the
1900s. That's right. Uh-huh.
Fascinating time. These two men, Mark Twain and Theodore Roosevelt, remain of great interest today to most Americans. They're certainly well-known figures to most Americans.
I should think so. I should think Mark Twain may be the most beloved American who's ever lived. I don't know any other except maybe Benjamin Franklin, and we associate him with years before the United States was formed. I don't know any other American who, when I mention I'm writing a book about him, people come to life and say, I love Mark Twain. I just love Mark Twain. And I think that's pretty true as I cast my mind over the people who have formed our history. I don't know of anyone who remains more loved than Mark Twain and Theodore Roosevelt, given the issues that we're living through right now, remains very vital and alive.
And I'm sure many people like me did not realize that these two great men, celebrities of their day, were well acquainted with each other. You can read more about it. Believe me, folks, we're just scratching the surface here with our conversation with Philip McFarland. The title of his book, again, is Mark Twain and the Colonel. Let me give you the titles, the two other ones that we were talking about. The Harriet Beecher Stowe book, the title is Loves of Harriet Beecher Stowe. And the Hawthorne book, the title is Hawthorne in Concord. Just a word or two about our guest. Philip McFarland was born in Alabama, Birmingham. He graduated from Phillips Exeter Academy, majored in history then at Oberlin. Then you served for several years in the U.S. Navy, 3.5 years in the Navy, and then a degree in English at Cambridge. Most interesting to talk about your book, Mark Twain and the Colonel. Thank you for your time today.
Well, thank you so much. I've enjoyed it.
Okay, so long now.
If you're like us, the news informs you, but it also piques your curiosity. Enter The Context, a free weekday morning newsletter from PA Post. PA Post is a new statewide, nonprofit, nonpartisan news organization reporting on state public policy issues. The Context ties together compelling stories from across Pennsylvania with insight and perspective. Start your subscription today at papost.org.
Your daughter looks up to you. She loves that you love soccer. You're her MVP. Together, you can take on underage drinking. From ages 8 through 11, kids are most open to parents' messages about alcohol. So learn the facts and defend her against the harms of alcohol. Take your best shot at underage drinking, one-on-one. Talk with your kids about alcohol. Learn more at knowwhennohow.org. A message from the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board.
You've probably heard that radio is the leading reach platform with over 93% of adults listening to AM/FM radio each month. That's an average of more than 243 million, which is higher than TV, PC, smartphone, and even tablet usage. Radio is stronger than ever as more ways to listen emerge, extending its reach to the majority of the American public, including millennials, Gen Xers, and baby boomers too. Because radio works in real time, the emotional connections made through audio have more of an impact on consumers
hours than video or print. Business conditions can change quickly, and radio is flexible, offering fast production turnaround times, allowing advertisers to put the right message out at the right time. As a media consultant, it's my job to help you fine-tune your message, schedule it with the correct frequency on the right media platform so that you consistently reach your target audience. At Butler Radio Network, helping your business succeed is our business. To learn more, call 724-283-1500 or visit butlerradio.com and click on Advertise. I'm Lisa Marie Kendrick, and I love what we do.
This is your station for Pittsburgh Penguins hockey, WISR Butler.
Oh, great. Balls of fire.